Today we have the privilege of having Rabbi Yehuda Landy, who will be giving us a lecture in honor of the Daf Yomi's study of Masechet Midos. Masechet Midos is the tractate which describes the exact features of the Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, and it is very relevant today for a number of reasons, especially to those who live in Yerushalayim and have to be careful not to wander inadvertently into an area that was sanctified for the Beit HaMikdash, among other ramifications. Rabbi Landy will now give us some fascinating insights into the exact correlation between the Mishnayos and what we see today on the Temple Mount. I turn over the mic to Rabbi Landy.
Good evening, everyone, from the Shalom HaKadosh. Thank you, Rabbi Kornfeld. Tonight, as Rabbi Kornfeld mentioned, we will discuss the tractate of Midos, which is actually a few blot off, because now the Daf Yomi is up to Maseches Kinim. So, with your permission, I'll just start on a small thing that has to do with Maseches Kinim before we proceed to Maseches Midos. Over the last 130 years, archaeological excavations have taken place around the Har Bayis, and surveys have been done on Har Bayis itself, which help us to get a little piece of the big picture of what things were like 2,000 years ago when the Beit HaMikdash stood there. Unfortunately, there are not very many artifacts that we can directly link to the Beit HaMikdash or to any function in the Beit HaMikdash. Therefore, it's important to mention two of these artifacts, one which has to do with Hanukkah, and one which has to do with Maseches Kinim. Since Hanukkah is coming up, we'll start with Maseches Hanukkah. I think we already showed this before. We don't have it on the source page today. If you go to the Hebrew source page, which is source number one in the PDF format, it is in order of the Mishnayos. Perek Beis, Mishnah Gimel, mentions Lefnim Minenu Sarag. Inside the Har Bayis was a sarag, was a fence, Hasar Tfachim, its height was 10 Tfachim, Ushlosha Sepirtas Hayusham, and there were 13 breaches in the sarag, Shapartsa Malchayavim, that the Greek kings, when, in the days of Antiochus, when they defiled the Beis HaMikdash, they breached the sarag in 13 places, Chazu V'Gadum, and when the Chashmonaim came and recaptured the Beis HaMikdash and the whole Star of Hanukkah, they filled in those breaches in the Sarag. The gods were connected to Shlosha Tzarish Tachavayos, and they were going there to bow down 13 places opposite those breaches in the Sarag. Now, the Mishnah doesn't tell us so much what was on the Sarag and what was the why did the Greeks take major offense at the Sarag more than anything else. Josephus, the historian, writes that on the Sarag there were stones with inscriptions, some in Greek and some in Latin, warning any foreigner that he was punishable by death if he stepped past the Sarag. So here we have the answer. The Sarag is a warning to the non-Jews that they are not permitted past this, and of course this offended the Greeks, and that's why they breached in 13 places. As I said, we have basically two, three artifacts directly linked to the Beis HaMikdash. And one and a half of these is a stone from the Sarag, actually. There's a complete stone which is sitting today in the museum in Istanbul, and another half stone which is sitting in the Israel Museum, both in Greek, and warning the foreigner that they are punishable by death if they walk past the Sarag. So that's the one artifact which has to do with Hanukkah. The second artifact, you can see on the source page if you go to link number 3, it says on it, the carbon inscription, this is a site by a person, Rabbi Resnick, from New York, who made a Mikdash museum, and he has some nice links to things pertaining to the Beis HaMikdash, and we'll use a few of them tonight. And he has over here the carbon inscription. The carbon inscription is very tricky, for many years, I don't think the archaeologists have figured out its purpose. But it's an inscription that you can see. It says under the word Korban, notice that the Nun is not a long nun as should be at the end of the word, but it's rather regular nun. And okay, that's common in archaeology from that period that you find those letters not always as the way we have them today. I'm not going into that now. The word korban, which obviously is written in Hebrew, in clear Hebrew, obviously a Jewish thing, and on it are two pigeons put upside down. When you look at the picture, it's hard to discern what exactly this thing is, but finally, after years of seeing pictures of it, the thing was on display once or twice in the Israel Museum, and it is a tiny cylinder, a tiny round cylinder, which carries the word Korban, and two pigeons on it upside down. What is the purpose of this cylinder? So, let's go to our Hebrew source page. We have Masechet Shkolim on the Hebrew source page, Parakei, Mishnah Gimel, it says like this. Abachot amot ayu ba-mikdash. There were four seals. Because Ibalem, Egel, Zachar, Gdi, Chotet. The basic system that went was that there was a person, when a person came to buy a korban, there was a treasurer who collected the money, and you came to the treasurer, and you gave him the money, and he gave you the seal. And then you went with the seal to the person who was in charge of distributing the korbanos. It was animals or a type of mincha. So it mentions over here that there were four types, depending on what a person came for, the type of mincha, the nesech, the wine, and the mincha. The Mishnah says in Mishnah Dala, that's in the next source, Mishnah Mavaksh Nesachim, the person who wants to bring a Minchas Nesachim, which is a carbon that has to come together with almost every carbon that a person brings. So he brings a flour with oil and wine. So Halach Lo to Yochanan, he goes to Yochanan Shememun Al Chosamos. He goes to Yochanan, who's in charge of the seals, and he gives him money, and he gets a seal from him. After that, he goes to Achia, who's in charge of distributing the Nesachim, and he gives him the seal, and in return, Achia takes a look at the seal, and he sees what it says on it, and based on what it says on it, he knows how much money, how much Nesachim, what type of mincha you have to give him, because for different animals, there's a different size of Minchas Nesachim. So, it seems to be that this system may have worked, besides what's mentioned in the Mishnah for Kabbalah and Nesachim, it could be that this system worked more. We know that a person is not allowed to go up into Har Bayis. The Mishnah says in Parakas, in Brachos, Leikon is under Har Bayis, Bafundaso. A person shouldn't go up with his money belt. Although it's also already said from Sochem that we see that money was brought into Har Bayis, but you can't bring it in as a belt in a non-Mechubadic way. But it could very well be that the system went that a person brought money outside. Of course, we'll never know. This seal was found outside. It could be it was on the Mikdash itself and fell down. We'll never know the origin of where it was. But this small stone cylinder could be a person went to a place, he gave money, and in return, he got a coupon for the carbon that he wanted to get. And then he went to the place where they're giving out the carbonos, and he got the carbon he wanted. So if indeed so, this is a seal. This is a seal for a ken of two birds. That's why it has a symbol of two birds on it. A person comes, he gets whatever it costs. It. We know from the Mishnah Krisis that there was a time when it was very expensive. We'll now have to cause the prices to drop. A person came and gave money and got this cylinder and then later went on to the Har Bayis, perhaps, and gave the cylinder in and got the proper carbon. So that's the one artifact which pertains to... which, as we said, pertains to Maseches Kinim, which is now being learned off Yom. So we'll proceed on to discuss the issues of Maseches Midos. Maseches Midos, as I've come mostly to mention, is in the news today, because people are more investigating into the Har Bayis today and comparing it with what we know from the Mishnah and other historical records and trying to solve this major mystery. Where actually did the Beis HaMikdash stand? The truth of the matter is, this is not a new problem. This is an issue that was already raised over 130 years ago. Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, author of the Drushas Tzion, he wrote a sefer of where we should be coming back to Eretz Yisrael, and in the sefer he also discusses the issue of building a Beis HaMikdash and the Imak of Korbanos. And one of the questions that he was asked was, how are you going to build a Beis HaMikdash and Imak of Korbanos? In order to be Imak of Korbanos, you have to know the place of the Mizbech. If we go to our Hebrew source page, at the end we have the Rambam, Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Perek Beis HaLocha Aleph. The Rambam says like this, HaMizbech Mekomo Mechuban BeYosar. The Mizbech is in a precise location. Ve'ein Mishanin Ozam Mekom Al Olam. And you can never change the location of the Mizbech. Shenema says, Zem Mizbech Lola LeYisrael. The story by David HaMelech. When David HaMelech was preparing everything for the Beis HaMikdash, there was a plague, and Hashem told him to go up to the Golan, the threshing field of Aravna, which was on top of Yerushalayim, the Harbais today, and he told him to go and be Makav a Korban. And David HaMelech saw a Malach, and he knew that that's the location where he is supposed to be Makav the Korban. He was Makav the Korban, and then the Magefa, then the plague stopped. And when David HaMelech saw this, he said, Ze Mizbech Lo'olo LeYisrael. This is the place where the Mizbech is supposed to be. We know David HaMelech, he even made a net, he wouldn't sleep in a bed until he find the place of Beis HaMikdash. All his life, pretty much, David HaMelech was working on finding the general location of Beis HaMikdash and the precise location of the Mizbech. And finally, at the end of his life, Hashem shows him where it is, and he declares, this is the place. U'b'Mikdash Neged Yitzchak Avinu, Shenem Avlech Echol Eretz HaMoriah. And it was in that place where Yitzchak was in the Akedah. And if we go on to Alach HaBeis, it says, Masoras Berakol, Shemakum Shabana Badov, Lashal Mizbech, Begorna Ravna, Hamakum Shabana Ba'avram HaMizbech. We have Masoras at the place where David HaMelech built the Mizbech in Ravna's threshing field. That's where Avram built the Mizbech, Vokalo of Yitzchok. And that's where the Akedah Yitzchok took place. V'Hamakum Shabana Ba'Noach, Shiyatim HaTeva. And that's the place where Noach built his Mizbech. V'Hamakum Mizbech, Shikiv Olav Kain Zehevel. And that's Mizbech that Cain and Hevel was a Makav der Korbanos. Ubokiv Adam Arishon Korban Shenivra. And there Adam Arishon was also Makav der Korban. So Rambam says the location has got to be precise location. And we also know, let me see if I put the source here, the Rambam in Halacha Dalet writes, the next in Halacha Dalet, Roshloshen Avim Aloim Marim Menagola. When Klai Yisrael came back to build the second Beis HaMikdash, they had a problem. They couldn't identify the Mizbech. The Gemara in Zerachim discusses this at length, how they knew. They came back with three Nevi'im, Chagai, Yitzchak, Malachi, and one of them, Echad Ha'id Lehem HaMakom HaMizbech, one of them testified and showed them precisely where the place of the Mizbech is. So in other words, the Rambam says the location of the Mizbech is precise and cannot be changed. So, one of the challenges for the Tzvi Hirsch Kalasher, which he was asked already in the Sefer, is how are you going to build a Beis HaMikdash with a Mizbech when we don't have the Navi today, unfortunately, and therefore it's going to be very difficult to find the exact location of the Mizbech. The Tzvi Hirsch Kalasher addresses the question in Drishas Tzion, and he comes up with an idea like this. There are a few ideas which basically were suggested. His idea is like this. He says, well, why not? Let's learn Maseches Midos. The walls of Harbais are known to us today. Let's learn Maseches Midos. We'll see exactly how much the distance from the walls of Harbais is where the Azara was. And we know where the Mizbech stood according to the Rambam. The Rambam gives us precise measurements. And therefore, problem solved. Based on that, we'll be able to build the Beis HaMikdash and the Mizbech. It was a nice theoretical solution. But when it came to be a practical solution, it's not as simple as it may sound. Why? What are the problems with this thing? Well, first of all, the Tzvi Hirsch Kalasher for some reason assumed that the Mishnah in Midos tells us exactly the dimensions of the Harbais and the distances between the Harbais and the Azara. But that is not accurate. The Mishnah in Maseches Midos, let's take a look back in our source page, in the Hebrew source page, Perek Beis, Mishnah Aleph Maseches Midos, the Mishnah says like this, Harabais al Chamesh Marsama al Chamesh Marsama. Harabais was 500 amos by 500 amos square. Rubom and Adarom, the major distance from the wall of Harabais to the wall of the Azara is from the south. Sheinilo min HaMizrach, the second distance is from the east. Shlishi lo min ha-tzafon, the third from the north, miyutza min ha-marav, and the least is from the west. Meaning what? The Mishnah does not tell us how far away the walls of the Azara were from the walls of the Harbais. The Mishnah just tells us that if you measure from the south till you get to the Azara, it's going to be more, a greater distance than if you measure from the east until you get to the Azara, which will be greater than if you measure from the north, which will be greater than if you measure from the west. So now the question is, first of all, why the Mishnah didn't tell us that? Why did the Mishnah tell us exactly how much it is? Why leave us this guessing game? That's one problem. The Mishnah doesn't tell us even how we can find the distance. That's number one. Another practical problem which came up today was that if you take a look, go to graphic number 7. It's a black and white aerial picture of the Harbais. Not such a great picture, but this is the best that I can find. There are probably some more newer pictures on the web as you look around. This is a picture of the Harbais from the north. From the top. What's interesting about it is that if the Mishnah says that Harbais is 500 amos by 500 amos square, what we see over here is a rectangle, which is already problem number one. It's obviously not square. To be exact, it's a trapezoid. It's not exactly a rectangle, but we'll call it a rectangle for practical purposes. I hope you're able to discern the walls of the Harbais in this picture. I will show another diagram, which is a sketch. Which is a sketch of the Harbais the way it looks today. One second. In a second, we'll get to another to a diagram which has a sketch of the Harbais today, and maybe be able to discern the walls better. And as we said, number one problem is that it's a rectangle. Number two, the size of the Harbais is also pretty puzzling, because the Mishnah says it's 500 amos by 500 amos square. How much is an amma, a cubit? There are so many different opinions in halacha. Let's say Chaim Noah's opinion is that it runs about 48 centimeters. There's opinions around 50 centimeters, 52 and a half centimeters, going up to the Chazon Ish's opinion, 60 centimeters. So number one, we have to find out how much an amma is before we can even start working. But if, let's say, we'll take the largest opinion, which is that of the Chazon Ish, 60 centimeters, and multiply it by 500, we'll get 300 meters. 300 meters. The length of the Kosel HaMaravi from the west of it, from north to south, is about 480 meters. A lot longer than 500 amos. The width of Harbais in the south is about 280 meters. Which means, if we'll take the Chazon Ish's opinion on an amma, and we'll measure from east to west, we'll have about 500 amos. We're roughly within the ballpark. If we will take a smaller amma, the amma of the Chaim Noah, for example, then even east to west will be more than 500 amos, because according to Chaim Noah, 500 amos is less than 250 meters, and as I mentioned, it's 280 meters. So another issue is the amma today. I want to show you, if you take a look at source number 21, I have a picture over here, which was taken by yours truly. This picture is at the southern wall of the Kotel. It's called the Southern Wall Excavation. It's actually on the western side. This is a platform from the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, preserved pretty nicely. When they built the Beis HaMikdash in those days, they built it to last. And you see that square stone in the middle, which does not seem to fit into the rest of the pavement. Now this stone over here is actually the cover of an ancient manhole. like a sewer. There's a sewer running underneath, and you see the two holes over there, that's probably for a metal hook. And that was a metal hook to lift the stone when need be and go into the sewer. Now, there is a sewer system underneath that street. So what's interesting about this rock? The dimensions of this rock are 56 by 56 centimeters. In the Mishnah, we have 2 to 3 examples of stones in the Beis HaMikdash necessary that the size was 1 amma by 1 amma. We have that by the Sota, mentioned in Maseches Midos, that they lifted a stone that was 1 amma by 1 amma and removed the dirt for the Sota water. And I mentioned over here, if you take a look on Perek Aleph Mishnah Tes in the source page, Umakam Hayosham Amma Lama, Betavos Oshaish, Betabas Oshakwoma. In the Beis HaMoked, there was a place that was 1 amma by 1 amma with a slab of marble, and there was a ring to it, which the Shalshelas, in other words, you lifted, and the Mishnah mentions that you lifted the slab of marble by the aid of a hook or ring to that was connected to the stone. So that's very similar to what we see here in the picture. Now this amma again is a 50, this stone is again 56, 57 centimeters, which is in accordance with the opinion of the Chazon Ish. Of course, we're not coming to Paskin practical halacha from these things, but I'm saying there are ammas by the Beis HaMikdash which match the Chazon Ish's opinion. There are other ammas that match other opinions. For example, the Mishnah in Bava Basra gives us the mention of an average kuch, an average hole where they buried people in those days. And it's 4 amos deep and by 7 tefachim by 6 tefachim. And if we measure pretty much the caves around Yerushalayim, the graves, from the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, they're all about 2 meters deep, which means we're talking about a smaller amma of Rav Chaim Noah's opinion. So I'm not taking sides over here. I'm just showing that the amma is not a simple story. And as we mentioned, according to the Chazon Ish's opinion, there are a few places where you can see the Chazon Ish's opinion. It's roughly between 56 to 60, 57 plus. I'm not going into the minor details. You can imagine, I don't know if they had, you know, the rulers in those days when they... But roughly, that's what we're talking about, and that matches the Chazon Ish's opinion. So this is important for us to get to our clue to understand where the Beis HaMikdash stood. So we have a Mishnah, and we have the fact, and the fact doesn't seem to match what the Mishnah says. Let's mention another thing: the Mishnah, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, on your Hebrew source page, Chamisha Sha'arim Hayu Lahar HaBayis. There were 5 gates to Har HaBayis. Shnei Shair Chulda Menadorim. On the south, you have 2 Chulda gates. That's what they named Chulda. Probably after Chulda Nevi'ah. Misham Shim Knisa V'Yitziyah. They serve as entering the Har HaBayis and exiting. Kiponus Min HaMarav. On the west, you had a gate called Kiponus. Misham Shim Knisa V'Yitziyah. Which also served for entering and exiting. Tedi Min HaTzafon La Misham Shim Klum. There was a gate called Tedi in the north. And the east, Shamizach Lashar Shushan, the Kohen Gadol went out to burn the Paraduma, which we will discuss also soon. So the Mishnah tells us that Har HaBayis had 5 gates, 2 in the south, 1 in the west. Anyone who did a little research on Har HaBayis today will take a look at the layout of Har HaBayis, will discover that in the western wall today there are remains or evidence, we should say, of 4 gates. So there's 4 gates, while the Mishnah mentions only 1 gate. So how is this possible? The answer, which is commonly accepted today, is that in the days of the second Beis HaMikdash stood for 420 years. It was built originally in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. After it stood 300 years, there was a king named Herod, who was known for the good and the bad. And the one good thing that he did was that he built he rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash. And when he rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash, he gives a whole speech to the people why it's necessary to rebuild Beis HaMikdash. The people, says our forefathers built it, they were poor, And we can't blame them. They didn't really have money, but now it's time to build and make this magnificent construction, which Chazal indeed say, whoever never saw Herod's building, never saw a beautiful building of his life. And Hodges rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash. But Josephus mentions that when Hodges rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash, he enlarged it so much, practically double its size, the original size. That's what Josephus mentions. Okay, that seems to be the answer, which leaves us with an obvious question. If this, indeed so, Josephus heard this added on to the Beis HaMikdash, why does the Mishnah tell us that Harabais is 500 amos square, when, in reality, Harabais was much larger because Hodas added on to Harabais? That's the question which people have been racking their brains out to figure out. There are two major approaches. One approach, which I can't say is a Torah approach, as we'll prove, as we'll disprove it soon, but one approach is that the Mishnah in Masechet Midos is an ancient text. It is dating back to the time of the Hashmonaim, or it's dating to pre-Hodos. It is not discussing what Hodos added on. It's avoiding the construction of Hodos for some reason. Why? So, the archaeologists have an explanation. Chacham didn't like Hodos too much. He wasn't such a nice guy. And therefore, they avoided mentioning, they avoided referring to his Beis HaMikdash. That's one approach. It's the common approach that if you take a tour around the Southern World Excavations, most tour guides will give you this approach. Rav Koren Shlita, who's considered, the Rav Koren, who's considered one of the top authorities, the top experts in the Gemara and our sources, and the archaeological evidence, he mixes this idea. First of all, he mixes this idea in principle. He says it's, he finds it hard to believe that Chachamim, who praise Hodas for his construction, would avoid him. That's number one. But he brings a solid proof. He brings a solid proof that the Mishnah is a late Mishnah referring to Hodas' construction, because the Mishnah Maseches Midos, I didn't bring it here. It's later on in the Perek. It is in Perek Dalet Mishnah Vav. It's not in the Hebrew source page. It mentions that the Heichal was 100 amos by 100 amos. In other words, it was 100 length and 100 height. And according to Josephus, the first one to build the Heichal 100 amos high was Hodas. And by the way, this is Sefer Midos called Ezra Skonim, which if you learn the Masechet Midos and you want to learn it thoroughly, highly recommended to use the Sefer. He basically discusses everything, basically discusses every question on Masechet Midos possible. And he already, in his introduction already, comes in with that question, which Beis HaMikdash are we describing here? We're definitely talking about the second Beis HaMikdash, but are we talking about the original one? Are we talking about Hodos? Maybe the Hashmonaim built the Beis HaMikdash? And he brings all kinds of proofs into different different ways. But as I said, Rav Koren says, clearly, the Mishnah is talking about a Harabais that is 100 amos by 100 amos, 100 amos high, and that is from the days of Hodos. I also have a bunch of proofs that the Mishnah is a very late text and is talking about the end of the days of the second Beis HaMikdash. A very late text. I'll just mention a couple of them briefly. First of all, the Mishnah refers to a gate called Shani Kanor. I don't know if I brought this in the Hebrew source page. The Mishnah mentions a gate called Shani Kanor, and Shani Kanor is a famous gate. The Mishnah in Yoma, which is brought down in the source page, mentions Nikanor Nasu Nisim Rudel Soso. Miracles happened to Nikanor's gates. And Raymus Kimsov Shvach, the story briefly, was that he made the gates in Alexandria from Egypt, and he brought them by ship, and the ship was about to capsize, and the ship was about to capsize, and they threw one gate in the water, and they went to the second one, and he held on to it, and he says, this is going, I'm going to go also, and then the storm subsided. And when he came to Akko or Yafo, the other gate had stuck, the one that he threw overboard, had stuck to the boat, and that's how he had both gates. These were miraculous gates. And interestingly, the Mishnah, I didn't bring this in the Hebrew source page, but in Perek Beis, Perek Beis Mishnah Gimel, the second section, it says like this. All the gates that were there, eventually, when Klal Yisrael got richer, they made them into golden gates. Chutz v'shar Nikanor. The only one they didn't change were the Nikanor gates, and the Shanasa ben Nes, because there was a miracle to his gates, and since his gates were so miraculous, they didn't want to change them. Originally, when I learned this Mishnah, I thought that when it says Klal Yisrael got rich, it's talking about in the days of Hardus. But I saw later in Josephus that he mentions that the one who made the gates of the Heichal, who made them into gold, he mentions a person, I don't recall his specific name now, but the person on the bottom says that this person lived around the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, which means that the changing of the gates into gold happened at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, and not in the time before Hardus. So that's one of the proofs. Another is that the Mishnah in Yoma lists a bunch of people who were Maskir Nosam Shvach, who we praised them for what happened, and I have this Mishnah over here, also Yom Alam Zayin. It mentions Ben Katin, it mentions Manbaz, it mentions Helene. All these people are at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. Ben Katin we don't know for sure, but Helene and Manbaz for sure at the end of the Beis HaMikdash. Let's try to figure out when Nikanor was. So if we go into our graphics page 16, I have over here a map of a burial cave, which is on Har Tzofim. This burial cave was on Har Tzofim. In it, there was a bunch of ossuaries, which are stone coffins. And on one of them, it has the inscription in Greek, as you can see printed on the side, and translated into Hebrew. The last line, the translation says, the bones over here are from Nicanor, the Alexandrian, who made the gates. Now, obviously, we're talking about the same Nicanor who made the gates for the Beis HaMikdash. Now, if you take a look at the map of this burial cave, then you realize that this Nicanor was no poor person. He was a pretty affluent person. You see, he has a massive-sized burial cave, probably one of the biggest, his family plot, one of the biggest of all that have been found so far. So it mentions his name. And you see it in Hebrew also, Nikanor Alachsa. Alachsa means Alexandrian. Again, the chaf over here you see is a chaf sofi, even though it's in the middle of a word. If you would like to see the ossuary itself, you will have to travel to London, because it's sitting in the British Museum. The German tour next week. Anyway, this is a stone ossuary. The stone ossuaries are common in Yerushalayim in the last century of the Beis HaMikdash, not before. And therefore, we can say pretty sure that the story of Nicanor with his gates is also a very late story, not a pre-Herodian story. So therefore, it seems that the Mishnah is a late text, as Rav Cohen suggests. Now, if so, that the Mishnah is a late text, so then the question, we're back to our question, why does the Mishnah not mention that Harabais was larger after Hurgus added on sections? And the answer for that must be, is that although Hurgus added on sections of Harabais, he was not Mekadosh them. He didn't sanctify them. They remained. The original Kedusha remained 500 Amos, and he added wings, which made it more comfortable and more room for doing whatever was necessary, but that didn't change the actual size of the Harabais. Time is short. I will not go into details of how we add onto Harabais. It's a very complicated issue. The Mishnah Shavuos mentions how to add onto the Azara and how to add onto Yerushalayim, which we cannot do, could have not been done in the Hardus's days because there was no Orem V'Tumim. But it doesn't mention how to add onto Harabais. So that's a very complicated issue. We will not go into that issue now. Once again, the Shir is not Halacha L'Maisa. We're trying to discuss the issues and to clarify, but we're not, when it comes to practical application, you should ask your local Orthodox rabbi. So, the Mishnah is in latex, but Hordus, his additions do not have Kedusha Vavais. If we take a look, for example, at going to source page 9, Rav Koren's theory, you have a model of Rav Koren's model of the second Beis HaMikdash. This model exists today in a place called the Kotel Tunnels. If you come to Yerushalayim, I'm sure that that's one of the first places on your itinerary after visiting the Kotel to go and see this, the Kotel Tunnels. Here's a beautiful model. And he designed the model in such a way that, although rectangular, but he cut off two wings. In other words, the wing closest to us, the southern wing, he has that big building over there, which we'll discuss in a moment. And on the northern wing, he also made a wall. And therefore, and the additions on both sides are not included. And with that, he has a 500 amas by 500 amas square. Rav Koren accepts the Chazon Ish's opinion regarding the amma, as we said, and therefore he has no need to add on anything to the east or the west. Now the east wall, we know for sure, is the original wall of the Har Habayis. The issue is, what else was added on? So Rav Koren takes it all the way from the east to the west, and he adds on, he has the two wings on both sides. Since it's Hanukkah time, so I will just mention a little about this big building. That you quickly see the building in the center, which is the Heichal, the white building, and to the left of it, at the end of it, you see two towers, and after that, to the right of that, you see a long building, which is known as the Royal Stoa. What is the Royal Stoa? We don't even know the function of the Royal Stoa. If you go to graphic number 8, that's another picture from inside the model. On your right, you see the wall of the Azara and the Heichal, and on the left, you see the Royal Stoa. Now, the Royal Stoa, Josephus is the only one who mentions it. We do not know its function, but Josephus says that it's the most worthiest thing under the sun to sit and describe. He says the columns were so massive that you needed three people to put their hands around it in order to get around the columns. This model today, by the way, is based on... Yes, going to graphic number 10. This is a picture which I personally took on my last visit to Athens. This is right outside the Acropolis of Athens, the center of Athens, and there they have a stoa. The stoa has been reconstructed. And there's a whole science exactly how they reconstructed it. There are a whole bunch of books over there for sale. But the Royal Stoa today, as designed in Rav Koren's model and in other models, is based on the stoa that's been done in Athens. So Hanukkah comes into the story again, the Greek architecture, which no doubt the Romans perfected, and we know the Hurdus used Roman architecture. We have a book called Vitruvius on architecture. Today has been published in Hebrew also, and Hurdus' architecture matches a lot of the stuff that's known. Okay, let's go on. Time is short. I want to focus on, if we look at source number 14, I apologize for the quality. This comes from an article by Lane Rittmeyer in the magazine called Bar Biblical Archaeological Review. And where Rittmeyer goes and mentions all the different possibilities, he doesn't have a Koran's possibility here, of where the original Har Habayis was. And I'm not going to go into... I'm not going to go into all the 12 opinions, but what I'm going to do is, because some of them are pretty much overlapping, go into number 17, the current major theories. In number 17, you have a model, you have a sketch of the Har Habayis, and on the right side, I have four different theories based, marked A, B, C, and D. We'll start in that order. We'll start with A. A puts puts the the Mikdash on the northern part of the platform that's in the center of Har Habayis. Why does he put it over there? If we go back to our source pages, source number 6, we will see a picture of a dome on Ha'abayis. Take a look. You're looking now at a picture on the Ha'abayis from north facing southward. So you see the Dome of the Rock in the background. And in the front you see a dome and held up on pillars. And underneath it a floor. What's interesting about this floor is that this floor is not part of the pavement, but this floor is part of the bedrock of the Ha'abayis. And the part of the bedrock of Ha'abayis. And and according to a physics professor from Hebrew University by the name of Asher Kaufman, this is indeed the location of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This floor over here was the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the Beis HaMikdash from here went eastwards to the left. If you click on the picture, you'll get to another picture, and that another picture shows you the alignment of the dome in the background with the red arrow pointing to it, and in the front you have the what's known today as Shahar Rachamim. Shahar Rachamim, what's known in English as the Golden Gate, underneath it has an earlier gate. So if indeed that is the gate that's in the eastern wall, and we know the gate in the eastern wall was aligned up with with the entrance to the Heichal and to Kodesh HaKadoshim, which we'll explain momentarily. So this is the place that the that Kaufman places his Beis HaMikdash. That is number SA. Let's go back to number 14. Sorry. Let's go back to number 17 with the current major theories. Current major theories B and C focus on another high point in the mountain. The highest point in the mountain is known today as the Sakra in Arabic, which is the center of the Dome of the Rock. If you go to graphic number 2, you will see, it takes a couple seconds to come up. So, we'll wait for you see a rock which is in the center of the Dome of the Rock. This rock is the highest point on the mountain, and being that it's the highest point on the mountain, and I'll just give you another reference, although we'll not look at it now because time is short. I have a topographical sketch of the Ha'abayis, source number 13. This rock is the highest point, and being that this is the highest point, it played a major role in the Makom HaMikdash. How did it play a major role? So here we have two different opinions. For many years, it was accepted that Baz and others that this is the rock that's in Kodesh HaKadoshim. In other words, the highest point on Ha'abayis must be the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Why is this so? Let's go to number 18. And over here I have a cross section of the elevation levels of the Ha'abayis, the Azara, and the Beis HaMikdash. And as we go up from the Ha'abayis on the right side, let's look at the bottom diagram. We go up 12 steps, we get to the level of the Yad HaSnashim. And another 15 steps to the level of the Azara. And another 2.5 amos to the Ezes Kohanim. And from there, another 6 amos, 12 steps, to the level of the Ulam. So in other words, the Ulam is the highest point on the mountain. And we have a source from Maseches Yoma, Perek Hei Mishnah Beis, you have that in the Hebrew source page. When the Aron was taken away in the first place on Midrash, there was a rock protruding from the ground, which is called Evan HaShasir. In other words, the Mishnah is telling us that the rock of Evan HaShasir was visible through the floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So if we look at the layout and we see how high it goes up, and the rock is going through the floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, by all likelihood, this is indeed the place, this rock in the center is indeed the place of of the Kodesh HaKadosh. 100 years ago, some people raised questions about this rock and said it cannot be the place of the Kodesh HaKadosh. I'm not going to go into all the questions. One of the issues raised was that the rock is too large to be the size of Kodesh HaKadosh. Kodesh HaKadosh was 20 by 20, which is 10 meters by 10 meters. The rock today is larger. So that was one of the issues raised. Okay, The simple answer to that is that in the days of the Beis Hamikdash, only a small part of the rock was visible in Kodesh HaKadoshim. Today, the rest of the ground has been removed around, has been removed away, and therefore, you see much more of the rock. So that's a simple answer to that. There were other issues. Time is unfortunately short. We can't do everything in one day. But the people who raised this issue and said that the rock cannot be the stone of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so what is this rock? So they came up with the idea that the rock is the location of the Mizbech. And that's why you see these B and C are overlapping, because the Mizbech, which is to the right of the Hechol, in C, the Hechol is moved over and to the left, to the west, and the rock, the rock is the place of the of where the Mizbech was. This was accepted by a couple of engineers, Gaius engineers, Conrad Schick and others, very, very problematic. Unfortunately, people today still accept this theory. The theory is impossible. There's nothing to discuss. It's impossible for various reasons. But if this was the location of the Mizbech, from there the rock drops sharply to the west, and that would mean that the Hechel, which is to the west, was built on the air. Plus a couple of other technicalities. The likelihood of that, very slim. Slim to nil. I want to mention, it's very important to notice that Josephus, when he describes where the Beis HaMikdash stood, he says Shlomo HaMelech built it. He says he built it on top of the mountain in a place that was barely large enough to hold the Hechel and the Mizbech. And that's it. And later on, people added on, and they added on more. We know the Ezra's Nashim, according to the Gra, was added on the days of Yom Shafat. Time went on. It's not like it looks today. Today it's pretty much flat, but in ancient times it was more like a pyramid. And that's what Josephus said. Now Josephus either said it's based on what he knew, in other words you could see it, or based on tradition. But the bottom line is Josephus is telling us it's built on a location where the only that based on Middash Animus Bech attend there no more. Which we, for me leaves no doubt that indeed that stone is the Evan HaShasir. Number D is letter D is by an engineer named Tuvia Sagiv, and he is convinced that the Beis HaMikdash stood in the southern part opposite where the Kotel Maravi is today. Now people like this suggestion because of course everyone who's standing at the Kotel likes to believe that he's davening straight and he's davening straight at the word of Makom HaMikdash, and problem solved. Now Mr. Tuvia Sagiv, with all due respect to the person, he has a lot of nice questions. But just because he has a lot of nice questions doesn't mean we have to accept his answers. And I'm not going to go into all the details of what the problems are. He knows he has major problems. I really can't go into all of it. But let me just mention one of his points that he brings, which is indeed a very problematic point, which he raises. The Mishnah in Yoma tells us that the Kohen Gadol had a mikvah on the roof, on the Shaar HaMayim. And the Mishnah tells us that it was 23 amos high, and that was above the floor of the Azara, 23 amos high. And the water coming to this mikvah came from a place called Ein Etam. Ein Etam, most people are convinced that it's a place south of Beit Lechem, which is higher than Yerushalayim. And the aqueduct, which functioned for close to 2,000 years, in different formats, brought water by gravitation. From that place to Harabais. So Tuvia Sagiv claims that if we put the Harabais, if we put the Azara on the high part of Harabais, then the aqueduct comes in too low to fill up that mikvah. Which is, as I said, he has some valid questions. But, okay, the question is that indeed any time? Oh, anyway, he's convinced, he says it's based on the Kabbalah, he calls the same called Eretz HaMelech, to prove that the place where the Makom HaMikdash is, Shem Ari, there's nothing there today, and that's the only empty place in the Harabais, and therefore he's convinced that that's the place. A lot of people accept that and like the theory. Of course, I'm not going into further details. To base his theory, he's forced to say that the Kotel Maravi today was not built by Herod, but was built by Hadrian at the pagan temple. And I don't think anyone likes the idea that they're davening by the Kotel Maravi, which is the wall of the pagan temple. Plus, archaeological evidence, although has not proven that or who built the Arabized Wall, we know for sure it was built by Jews and not by Roman pagans. So anyway, as mentioned, there's pretty clear-cut evidence that the platform on the top of Arabais and the rock in the center is the place of the Kodesh HaKodashim, and I hope, I don't know when, but I hope we'll be able to continue this, the second part of it, to discuss more of the issues and maybe some more clues to show where the Beis HaMikdash actually stood and how it goes with dimensions. We have to stop for now. We hope that in Herb Yemenu, this problem will be zocher to have the Neviim who will be able to solve this problem straight and show us exactly where the Makom HaMikdash and the Mizbeach was.